Brent Daugherty, Mickey Ryan, and Don Davenport. This is the 3HL, powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone.
Powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone. Brent Daugherty, Don Davenport with you. She's got her big pillow to give her a little support. Dawn's pregnant, if you didn't know. There's the announcement for today.
Lord, I know there are women out there that love being pregnant.
Are there?
I don't get it. Not quite there yet.
We've got a lot going on today. I'll tell you about the first hour right now, and then we'll move on after that. But in studio right now, former Titans linebacker Keith Bullock in the house. What's up, KB?
Not much. I'm glad to be here.
Your first Mr. question to Monday Dawn night. Was, when are you due?
Yes. She said, not soon enough, which was a great answer.
What's Ooh. Happening with you, man?
Oh, man. We were talking about some things, and I got a local project going on that I'm not ready to reveal, but I've been running around doing some business things that I'm not accustomed to, and When I made this decision to jump into this business, I don't know. I might have been off of a binger because it's more work than I thought it was going to be.
That's usually how it happens, right?
I'm like, dang, I really signed up for this?
See, that's what happened. Like, for those guys understand this. Guys get to, like, drinking over at Losers or something. Right. Like, talking about, before, hey, man, let's up? Do this.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
the
absolutely.
Next day, you're like, wait, what did I agree to?
And that's funny because, you know, Steve Ford's a good friend of ours, whatever. Yeah. And I was telling him what I'm doing. He's like, oh, buddy, you sure you know what you're doing? I was like, no,
okay,
but I'm glad
Steve
I got.
Okay, if Steve says that to you, you're in trouble because yeah. he's opening up stuff, you
exactly.
know, in Belize and all that.
But so. No, it's good crap. Because I got, yeah. you know, support in this venture. So it'll be cool. I'll be back to talk about it soon enough.
Though. Okay, that's good, man. So for those that don't know, you went back after you got done playing. You got your MBA.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're not just talking about, like, not that there's anything wrong with the University of Phoenix. I love
yeah,
it. But
you went to gotta do.
You went to George Washington.
Yeah, in D.C. I got a hands-on experience, which was great. You know, the discipline, again, of having to get up and be in class. But what was great about that experience was, like, I was getting something from it. You know, when you go to college, you're on scholarship. High school, you feel like you're forced. Like, you know what I mean? High school, it doesn't really...
Or you're just not mature enough to realize the opportunity that you have in front of you to learn more. That's
hey,
that's where I look like
women,
I look at where I was.
Women mature faster than men. That's girls mature true. Faster than boys.
No,
so I guess you're
I
right.
was there in college too. Like I missed out on the opportunity to learn.
Yeah, I know. So which brings me to going back to school because like I was telling you guys off air, once you retire, people are like invest in this. Oh, give me some money. I can help you do that. And it's
I can't
like,
imagine, man. You just always have people pulling at you.
Yeah, it's cool. I was like, I'll invest in myself and kind of learn the landscape. And I did take some of the different business courses that were offered through the NFL, like at Stanford, Wharton. There was Harvard. That was a cool course. So at least, you know, we don't know what's going on, but we're kind of getting in tune to what's going on. And you can start thinking about, you know, what you want to may get into or may not get into when yeah. you're done playing football.
I tell my kids all the time, have options.
Yeah, for sure.
Have options. So it's funny because, so this wasn't an online thing.
Nah.
Because everybody's doing this online stuff. Now, I don't think I would do well at that. Like, I need the personal interaction. I need to sit here and look at you and have a conversation.
Yeah, I don't, to be honest, I have too many options in life to just be disciplined enough on my own to go sit in front of the computer at 7:30 or whenever I have to do it, like, because somebody can call and be like, hey, you want to go to Vegas for the weekend? All right. I'm not going to be like, no, I have this class. Man, yeah, I'm like sitting here at 35. I have this class. I can't go. Like, no. And my wife is going to be, all right, I'm going to add, obviously, I'm going to make sure she's good. Everything good at home? All right, I'm going to Vegas. What about your class? Do it when I get back.
Keith Bullock with us, 11-year career, 10 with the Titans from 2000 to 2009, 2010, of course, with the Giants. And man, it seems like you played longer than 10 years for the Titans.
Yeah.
Those were some good years.
Yeah, it was fun. But what I'm starting to realize now is, like, I got to Nashville 20 years ago in April. Like, so I guess my first time in Nashville would have been this, in December of 99. We played in the Music City Bowl.
I forgot about that until I looked it up this morning.
Yeah. And then I got drafted. Like, and the Titans didn't even talk to me at the combine, I don't believe. I don't remember meeting with Schwartz at all. So it was.
Isn't that crazy? So you just never know.
Yeah, nah, you never know. And man, you put in all that work. Like, you put in all that work. I could have sworn I was going to be like a top 15 pick or something like that. But then I understand it when you break it down, because San Francisco was really interested in me, and they had me playing like the Sam, like a nine technique, like a hard nine. And like, that's not what I do. So I remember when they came and worked me out, like right, like after my pro day. So I had a personal workout at San Francisco, and it was my tight end, like Steve Berminski. And I remember just letting him like rag me, like when we were in, like doing those drills, but like all the other drills, like the in space and all that. But like, I just didn't show strong point of attack, like on purpose, because that's not what I want to do. You know what I mean? And I definitely, for whatever reason, it just felt I was already going to be like a top pick anyway. But they ended up drafting Julian Peterson, who actually is a more natural nine pass rushing, hold the point linebacker. And then I got drafted 30, which that was a long ass day.
I bet it was, right?
That was like a long day.
You were the next linebacker after Julian Peterson, but it did take until 30.
Now, actually, of course I remember. John Abraham was a linebacker, linebacker defensive end. He was like slash. Okay. That's how he came out. And obviously he played defensive end. Yeah. But he also played in 3-4 defenses. And then Rob Morris went to the he went to the Colts.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And then I went after Rob Morris.
So what was that
the fifth linebacker.
What was that day like? Like, you knew San Francisco was interested, but who else did you think showed interest? Because you hear these
obviously
stories.
Obviously not
all the
Tennessee
time.
Since you didn't visit with them. Yeah.
Well, possibly like the Bears, but obviously that's signed, sealed, and delivered to Canton already. They took Urlacher. And
fair enough.
Right, you know what I'm saying? Can't be mad at that. like I told you, JP already.
Yeah.
But this was an interesting one. So Green Bay showed a lot of interest, and I was going to Green Bay, probably in my mind when I play it back, because that's the offseason Mark Chimura got in trouble with the underage girl, the babysitter. So they let him go. Green Bay took Bubba Franks in the first round and Nyel Diggs in the second round. So they came and they took their linebacker in the second round and took their tight end.
It's
in the
funny
first
how
round.
Things work out. And so if Chimura doesn't get in trouble, then you might be a Packer.
And I have some Super Bowls.
Dang.
That's cool. It worked out.
So, I don't know. Who knows if you would still be known as Mr. Monday Night?
Oh, yeah. You know?
So when the Titans had that pick, you get a phone call from them. What were you thinking at that point? Because, I mean, when you drop to 30, you're starting to think, hey, what's going on here? I'm a first-round guy.
Right, yeah. So when I start to drop, right, I think after 28, that's when they took Rob Morris, the Colts took Rob Morris, then my phone rings, and it's the Saints. And they're like, has anyone called you yet? I was like, no, you guys are the first ones. And, like, at the end of the day, once I didn't go – higher than I thought. Look, I just want to get drafted. The whole goal is to get drafted in the first round at this point, and there's only like three more picks left. And like, none of these people are showing they need a linebacker. And the Rams, maybe. I would have maybe gone to the Rams. But yeah, the Saints called and they said that they were going to pick me with their first pick of the second round. And then that just, I was like, yeah, all right, that's cool. Thanks.
So the Titans,
and you didn't. Yeah, and then
so the Titans call, and what's your reaction? What did they say?
So the Titans call, man. Like, so I think after Rob Morris got drafted and the Saints called, I was just like, I went and I shot basketball, like outside, like I did a bunch of different things. You know what I mean? And at this point, like, I just felt like. I had to go to the bathroom. My stomach was just like, at a point where, I was in the bathroom and And yeah, my cell phone goes off, and
you're dropping a deuce
again. Yeah, and Jeff, it's Jeff.
Okay, you didn't have to get.
Everybody got it.
You got it.
But yeah, nah, I was indisposed.
Yeah,
hey, and KB, Jeff was like, "Hey, Keith, it's Jeff Fisher, Tennessee Titans. We ready to be a Titan? We're gonna draft you with our next pick, you know." And I was like, "Yeah, coach," and you know. You know what? It was funny. I definitely remember this. Like, you know, of course, I like wiped and everything, go out, but I did not wash my hands. And my brother was the first one I gave a high five to before I could get to the kitchen. And, you know, I don't know. It was just like a lot going on because I wanted to see my name go across the screen and all that stuff.
You know, your family reaction.
Yeah.
That's outstanding. Well, I appreciate you sharing these stories because that's what these guys are going through right
now.
Man. And the combine workouts are now in prime time, so we'll give you the schedule tonight, and we'll ask you about your combine memories.
We pulled all your combine measurements.
Yes. Oh, nice.
We got them all.
So. Nice.
You would have been fine as a quarterback. Everybody's worried about hand size. You'd have been more than fine.
Yeah, your hand size good. 10.75.
I don't know.
Good.
In comparison, what was Joe Burrow?
Nine.
Oh, man.
And there's not a single quarterback in the NFL below 9. So
yeah, he hasn't had trouble in this whole time, so I don't even know why they put.
Well, Patrick Mahomes, you know, added in. Hey,
he was like 9.25.
He was 9.25, and he's like, I haven't really had any issues. I'm like, he sure hasn't.
Right? I love that. I love that.
Keith Bullock with us until 3 o'clock. We'll get his combine experience when we come back.
Breeze dropping on second down, firing deep down the middle. Bullock intercepts it, and he slides down at the 35. Bullock with 3 interceptions. He is Mr. Monday Night. It's official.
Keith Bullock in studio. Brent Doherty, Don Davenport with you. Mickey has a day off. 3HL on 104.5 is home. Never get tired of that, do you?
No, it's pretty cool.
I don't. I never get tired of that.
Oh, yeah.
I was sitting here thinking about it, though. It was like that, to me, because obviously going through and looking back, like, you know, as a player, you pick out, when you watch film, you know, you pick out the plays. Okay, I can make this play out of this formation. Okay, and this down and distance, if they come out like this and they run this, I'm going to be in this position so I can make this. So you pick out your plays, and that just happened to be one of those games that, you know, my plays came to me. Look, I pick out plays every game, but that game, it just happened to really, really happen. Like, you visualize it. So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
So what was it? In the week leading up, looking at film, you guys saw something?
No, I mean, look, it's called Pony. The set is called Pony. And back then, they would use, and what Pony is 2 running backs in the backfield. So you have 2 wide receivers, and so you have a 3 wide receiver set. So it's 2 in the backfield, 2 wide receivers on one side, and 1 wide receiver on the other side. And back then, Drew Brees' guy was Marcus Colston. And as the Mike linebacker out of the coverages, I was opening up to the strength. You're told to open up to the strength. So that's a 2 wide receiver.
So one tight end also?
No tight end.
Oh, okay.
So I open up.
You didn't have to worry about that.
Right, exactly. Okay. So really all I have to worry about is the 2 wide receiver side, but quarterbacks are taught wherever, you know, to read my shoulders. So I would open up the opposite way because obviously Drew Brees is a great quarterback. So he's probably looking at me, oh, this fool, he opened up like the wrong way.
Way early, yeah.
Just play defensive back, so I'm speed turning or I'm head turning, you know, after 4 or 5. I'm just baiting him, you know what I mean? And that's the game within the game that, you know, you can play once you get to a certain level and you understand your defense and you understand the offense. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
That's the game.
Yeah. It doesn't work against Peyton. Like, oh, man. Like,
I'm glad you brought that up because Blaine tells a story about going up against Peyton and he would come up in coverage and Peyton would be staring at him. And Blaine's like in his head, he's like talking out loud to himself like, why is he staring at me? What am I doing? Like, why is he staring? So the next play, same thing. He's staring at me. He goes, he's looking at my feet. He goes, if I'm standing like this, he knows I'm in press bail. If I'm standing like this, he knows this. So he said he started mixing it up. And it's funny, like those games within the game like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a pretty, you know, popular play within Titans history against the Colts when Tank Williams hits Peyton from the blind side and I scoop and score. But he didn't check the cover. He didn't feel he needed to check the coverage because he never saw that look. Like, I always probably bailed, or Tank probably bailed. Tank was our blitzer. So he had a running back for one, but Schwartz brought two. And boom, you know, the running back took me, inside guy, Tank outside guy. And that's what happened. But the play I remember, I never cheated against Peyton Manning again, was we were playing here, and this is when they had Pollard was their tight end. And they used to just Marcus keep running him up the seam, and that was my guy. We play man-to-man. So they're running, like, for three, four games in a row, taking this slug up the seam, and Marvin Harrison is coming in and catching that, you know, quick in.
Underneath
boom.
You,
like,
yeah.
It's 6, 7, 8 yards a pop. So there's one time he's coming up the seam. Marv breaks. I come off. Peyton, he doesn't pump. He just – I can't explain it.
There's no reason for him to see this.
Yes, because I'm coming off as he's coming down, but his reflexes, he was just able to, I guess his hands was big enough. He was just able to to hold the ball, bring it back, and they hit Pollard for like 30 yards down the seam, wide open. And like, Jeff is cussing me out, but look, man, I'm trying to make one of them Palomalu plays, man. Yeah. You know, so and for me, that's why I was never a guesser. Like, I could never. You know, we hear, like, you know, Junior Seau, he's guessing, and I could never be a guesser because it seemed like I always mess something up when I guessed.
I love these conversations, like letting fans in on kind of the insight to the game and all of that. As it ties to the combine and these meetings with teams, because we talk about how important they are for these players leading up to the draft. Are these the kind of do you have conversations like this? Is it, and I know it's different probably now than it was even when you were going through it, but I'm sure there are principles that are the same in it. Is it more personal stuff? Is it, what do they push you on? What are those meetings and those conversations with teams prior to the draft like?
Well, like, so for myself, so like, okay, if I guess I quote unquote maybe had baggage, I don't know. Like, I say I'm one of those players that had baggage, and I don't know where that came from. Maybe I was a foster kid, or, you know, because they go into everything, you know.
Oh,
maybe
yeah,
some of
deep.
The you know, off the field situations that I may have gotten into as a sophomore, just like being a 18, 19 year old kid first time, you know what I'm saying? That
yeah.
were,
which, by the way, like, covering you when I worked at News 2 and just like knowing you for this long is so crazy that was even a thing with you.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But
it's
like,
just crazy.
But for that, so to, I say all that to say, so when you get into the room with the one-on-one with the coaches, like, it just depends. Like, I remember one coach being like, yeah, so he just starts, yo, I hear you're late to meetings. I hear that, you know, you can't be trusted and stuff like that. So he's just saying those things to get a reaction. And I knew that's what he was doing because those things aren't true. Like that's not true. But then they would ask you personal questions like, you know, do you hang out? How many people do you hang out with? And when I came out, it was just right after Ray Lewis got in trouble. So it's like, you know,
there
if we moved,
yeah,
if you
that
came
was
to
Titan Super Bowl when
yeah.
that happened. Yeah.
So if you came to our city, who would be coming with you? You know,
like entourage questions.
Yeah, like entourage type questions and questions.
Did you get asked about the foster kids stuff?
I don't really. They always kind of like, because they would think that I'm holding, like harboring something. Like that would be like, that would be their thinking. You know, I think if, in an interview room, if they do ask that, they want to see where you are mentally on that, because it's all mental stuff. And I was a psychology major, so like it was pretty interesting to
so
me.
So you're reading them? Like,
yeah, no, nah, just like I just knew they were coming with it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And my agent did a great job of like getting me ready and letting me know. But yeah, they really, you know, like if you're not sharp, like they'll twist you up. You know what I mean?
And we heard from Juwan Jennings yesterday from there, and I'm like, those personal meetings for him,
yeah,
those one-on-ones and face,
they
want to
know about your
they're
mom.
Really yeah, important.
He got dismissed by an interim coach,
right? Like, there's a lot of history there where everybody loves him now, and he's admitted, you know, I've matured and all that, but he's gonna probably get some of those dig into you questions while he's there.
Yeah, absolutely. They definitely do. I mean, look, they do great research. They definitely do their due diligence.
Your combine experience, what was that like?
And first, do you remember your 40 time?
Oh, yeah, you just told me.
I just told you?
Oh, I think.
Oh, maybe Brent must have told you.
Somebody did.
447.
Okay. Yeah, but. So
did you remember it prior to us telling
you? Yeah, I ran. I remember because coming out, I'm like, so you asked, let me answer your first question. It was all business for me because right after the Music City Bowl, I signed with my agent. Mm-hmm. I went out to Gary Richard, rest in peace. You know, I went out there to Santa Monica, California, first time. Like, and even being out there motivated me because, like, I took $5,000 advance from my agent just to have some money. You know what I mean? So, you know, other guys that were in my camp, they had cars, they had jewelry. Like, that wasn't important to me because I knew, like, if I handled my business, I'll get all that on my own. That's just all. So it was all business for me. But being out in L.A., that was interesting, too, because, like, you're seeing all this fancy stuff and, like, you still can't have it. You're still standing outside in front of a club. Ain't nobody letting you in. Nobody knows who you are. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, it was real, like, real deal reality. So then you get to the combines. It's still all business. And then, like, you're finally seeing the guys that you're reading about. Because it wasn't like now. These kids are meeting each other at 15 years old with these 7-on-7 tournaments and staying in touch with social media and all those things. So, like, we only see each other in, like, the Athlon magazines or the Street and Smiths. I don't even know if these magazines are still around. like, I'm seeing this dude, like, walking down the hall. It was only linebackers there. And I'm like, yo, who's this lineman? And it's, like, LeVar Arrington.
Crazy.
And then this other big dude is, like, coming. It's Brian Urlacher. And then I'm like, dang, these dudes are dudes. Like, this is the first impression. So then you definitely turn it up, and I just focused in.
Let me stop you there. We'll pick up on the other side, visiting with Keith Bullock, getting his combine memories. We'll also talk about the CBA with Keith and get his take on that. All that coming up, 615-737-1045. If you have a question for Mr. Monday Night, Keith Bullock, at KB53 on Twitter. We'll be right back.
Hey!
HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone. Beautiful Thursday in the Music City.
Brent Dorn, finally, Don, some sunshine, baby.
Keith Bullock in studio.
I'm appreciating the sunshine.
Yes.
KB53 on Twitter. So you were talking about your combine experience, and you mentioned walking down the hall, and there are only linebackers there, and you see these really big guys, and you're like, okay, who's this defensive end? It was LeVar Arrington.
Yeah.
Brian Urlacher. That was a hell of a class.
Man. Yeah, for sure. Julian Peterson was cool. I remember him. Marcus Washington, he was cool. Auburn guy. You know, there are like a handful of guys that I did speak to, but I definitely was there. You know, Peter Sermon actually was one of the first guys that I met at the combine. Of course, PD had his Oxford pants and his polo shirt on. Hey, that's my guy, American Pie. I love him. But, yeah, so I'm sure – I think those – I weighed in heavy that morning because you get your drug test in the morning and they tell you not to go to a bathroom. And, of course, I went to the bathroom. So they keep you in this room and they make you just keep drinking water until you have to go.
So you're, like, bloated.
Yeah, but they keep coming back. Yeah. Drink some more. Like, they really – it's like they have water coaches. You know, it's like if Steve Waterson is standing over you, hey, drink some more water. Drink some more. Did you drink enough? You got to go yet? Like that's totally what I remember. And then.
So you're drinking water.
Yeah, for sure. So that made me weigh in heavy.
244.
Yeah. And then when they came to my pro day, I was 238. And I remember them asking me, oh, what happened? I was like, I got sick. Like, oh, whatever, man. But yeah, then it was all business, man. We went out there, we ran our drills. I remember I had headphones on. It was kind of cold in the, what's it called?
RCA Dome. Was it nerve-wracking?
Nah, I was ready.
Yeah.
I was prepared. Like, I didn't run a 40. I was going to, but three guys pulled or tweaked their hamstring before I ran. And like I said, it was chilly in there. So I was like, nah, I'm cool. You know, but I did every other drill and everything else. But it didn't matter. They already knew who they wanted to take. It was all a waste of my time.
38-inch vertical jump. You ended up running a 4.47. Again, the hand size, 10.75. And it's funny how much talk hand size gets these days. But apparently 9.75. I hate that I know all this.
What is the average?
9.75 is the average. Wow. So, Patrick, so when Joe Burrow measured out at 9 inches, he tweeted out, I guess I should retire. You know, my hands are so small. And that's when Patrick Mahomes retweeted and said, you know, I'm 9.25 and I think I'm doing all right.
Yeah, I never knew any of those stats. They're pretty cool to hear.
You could have been a quarterback.
Yeah. You know what? And growing up, I always hated quarterback. I was the third string quarterback on my high school team. In my sophomore year, I had to start. I had to start. And, yeah, that's the only game we won. We were 1-6-1. I had more. I threw more interceptions than completions. This is, I'm not even lying. And I used my prolific scrambling ability to win the game, and I kicked the extra point.
Oh, that's awesome.
Hilarious.
Oh, that's outstanding. Speaking of quarterback, I look back through that draft. It was a weird draft. There was only one quarterback taken in the first round, and that was Chad Pennington. And there were only, like, two in the first three rounds.
Chad, Mark Bulger was in our – Mark Bulger was a free agent, though.
Yeah.
He's on my curling team. That's why I know he's in my draft class.
That's right. With Ruse, right?
Ruse
and
Jared Allen.
Are you guys still doing
this? Yep. You know what? I have to give all the credit to them these days right now because they're definitely still full go. Like,
they're trying to make the Olympics.
Yes, I'm still on the group chat, but like I told you, I got a project going on. I got a bunch of stuff. Life calls. But I was strong the first year and a half. And like, yeah, they are an official curling team. I'm an alternate. I'm still an alternate. I definitely have to make a practice this. I don't want them to really kick me off. I know I'll be kicked off the team if I stop receiving, if I don't get any more group texts.
Yeah.
Then I'll just call Jared like, yo, man, what's up? I know where he lives. So I'll just pull up.
So those like a couple weeks go by and then you haven't gotten a message. You're like, hey, boys, what's going on? Hope everybody's okay.
Nah, I respond. You know what? I'm still into it because I understand it. It's just like time permitting. You know, I can't put forth the effort that they're really putting forth, you know, like making the practices in Minnesota and going to Ottawa and these different places to actually, you know, go Bondspiel, get smacked up and then come home, you know. And I like to spend time with my kid. Not to say that they don't, but like their dedication is just way, way more than mine. Right
different
now.
Priorities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wouldn't want to cheat the team. It's very hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard. And I feel like I know what it took for me to get to the level that I was at what I played. And I know that right now, if we had home ice, because we're going to the Antioch, the Ford Center, mm-hmm. to practice out there, but we can't get good reads. Really, the only thing we can work on is slide and technique, but there's more to it than that just because the ice isn't, you know, it isn't regulated ice for curling. So hopefully we can be, you know, the ones that bring the Nashville Curling Center to Nashville.
This is fascinating. Awesome. Is it like bowling? Like, do you like drink beer while you do it? Like,
you drink beer afterwards.
Oh, okay.
You definitely drink beer afterwards. And it's funny, man.
You
our team.
Any competition, yeah. Right?
Yeah, no, our team is funny because, like, you can tell, like, kind of when you're out of it, you might just have one more game. Like, if you don't win your first two, you're probably down low in the loser's bracket. So that's when me and Bulger probably start drinking a little bit more. Jared, he doesn't really partake in the drinking too much. He does, but not during games.
Ruse, Jared Allen.
Yeah, Jared Allen.
Michael Ruse.
Michael Ruse, if he sees us going down the tank, he might have one, but I say me and Bulge do the heavy lifting once we see it's over.
That's why you're an alternate now.
Yeah, Ruse, like,
I know.
Like, Ruse, like, owns City Blocks in Germantown, doesn't he? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, Ruse, someone let Ruse see the business plans or the building plans for Nashville back in 2005.
He knew what to do.
He was one in over there before everything.
He knew what to do with his signing bonus. Yeah. I'm sitting here like, damn, why is the only thing I own is my house and my car in Nashville?
Well, and his wife right off the bat opened a little coffee shop there that was there forever. That was everybody knew about, you know.
Yeah, but he still owns the block that everything's on. Yeah. So he's winning. That's
yes,
my guy.
He is.
Right, so
good dude. Man, I loved those days in that team.
Oh yeah.
And those fun times. Titans. Yeah.
How much did when you got out transitioning into like the quote unquote real world?
Yeah.
How difficult was that? Like, because I always hear I miss the guys. I don't necessarily miss, you know, the banging, but I miss the guys.
You know what? I just kind of went with it. And, you know, I finished in New York, and being from New York and living right outside the city, like, I just kind of felt like the off season a little bit. I remember because, like, okay, what was weird to me is going to watch football on Sunday. So New York City, the only way you can watch, you can't subscribe to football in your house unless it's like the Jets or the Giants basic cable. Oh. So to watch, so they force you to go to the bars. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
so that's
okay.
How the bars make their money during the football season. So,
interesting.
Yeah, right? It's like a racket.
A racket in New York. I can't believe it.
Yeah, imagine that. But, yeah, so that's how I got into fantasy, seeing all that different stuff. But, you know, I just found myself doing nothing, like just hanging out with people that I normally hang out with in the off season. And it's like, what am I doing? You know, I'm like, out on a Wednesday night drinking. I got kids at home. I'm like, you know, it's just one of those things you realize you got to grow up. And then, you know, what do you want to do? And like I said, I always knew I expanded. You know, that lifestyle was about 6 months. But, I figured out how to go back to school. And I think that's the hardest thing in transition is guys have all these ideas and things that they want to do, but they don't know how to facilitate them. And then you might get with someone that says, oh, I can do this, I can do that, and you pay them a salary or a fee, and they can't do nothing. Most people are all talk. So you got to figure it out on your own, unless you got handlers.
HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone at KB53. Keith Bullock in studio with us. CBA talk all over the place. You went through this in 2006. The 1993 CBA was eventually extended with the owners giving the players a few things. More revenue in the salary cap, increased benefits, provided funds for medical expenses after post-career insurance runs out. How much did you keep up with that in the moment? Because I told you this before the show, and this is a negative thing about me, but I'll admit, I probably wouldn't keep up with it that much.
I mean, look, when I was playing, I feel like they keep the players in the dark, meaning the...
They don't want you to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless you actively go and search out the info, right?
Right, and I think that, like, the good example for me, I was telling you, Brent, is that Kenny Amato, who is a long-time long snapper and my locker mate, he was right next to me. He stayed on top of that stuff, Don, like the way that you speak, like the way that you refer to it. And for many years, he tried to be the player rep, and he just never got it. And I always felt...
But if you had questions, you would go to him?
No, you could.
Yeah.
But I just know that, and then... You know, most of the time the player reps are the people that are in the top 10% or 5% of salaries. You know what I mean? So, you know, they're speaking and, you know, from a distorted point of view. And when they're being spoken to by the owners or whoever's in charge, or, you know, whoever they're negotiating with, they're not looking at it from the low man on the totem pole point of view.
Right.
So Their pockets are good. And I remember...
AKA different tax bracket.
Right. Like, if it's Drew Brees and Tom Brady and, you know, Cam Newton, like, these type guys, you know, and they're not really affected. But we spoke earlier about, you know, like, we brought up Kevin Mawai in the 2011 one.
Love
and
that.
Sean O'Hara, who were two guys who spoke up on behalf of the players at the time. And, you know... Those guys didn't have a job. You know what I'm saying?
Right, Mawai's deal came Mawai's up.
Mawai's been
and then,
pretty vocal about that in the past, I think. Yeah.
So it's like it's a double-edged sword. But back to the matter, like if you're not on the – oh, yeah, where the owners talk to the reps is Hawaii. They bring you and your family to Hawaii for a week and – You know, that's where they have the player rep.
That's
where they have the player rep meetings. I know they used to.
You feel like you owe them.
Right. So, yeah, man, it's tough because then they come in and they tell you the terms. And like you said, Brent, I'm not really paying attention to that in October when, you know, we're about to play, you know, Fred Taylor or Peyton Manning or something like that. That's the quick 30-minute meeting before you go get ready to go outside. And then they vote in February and March, and it's like, hey, what's going on? So it's not one of those things that it's continuously embedded into your memory that you have to think about until it's too late or until
or research.
Yeah, research or until you're retired and you realize, like, oh, we've been getting the short end of the stick.
Yeah. So this current CBA adds the 17th game, which I've been asking all the former players that we have on our show or that we chat to, because from the outside, somebody would say, it's just one more game. Like, give me a break. What is right. one more game? I get it's such a physical league, but to you, what's one more game?
I mean, it's one more game is 80 more snaps. It could be, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's a physical, anything can happen within those 80 snaps. And then it's not one more game because if we're a playoff team, that just makes, if we're a wild card team, we're playing that extra playoff game because they're adding extra players as well. So, you know, and then the psychological part of it, you know, you've been in this league for, like, if you're a new guy coming, if you're a rookie, it's not going to affect you. But if you've been in the league, you think the season, your body feels like the season is over. You know, you're going to feel it. You hear people talk about it.
Your body is just done at
the end of the season. Yeah, you hear people talk about it. Your body is done. Like, if you're healthy, you know, quote unquote healthy, your body is done after Thanksgiving. That's the last good meal. I remember, like, at Thanksgiving, like, that's the last time I'm probably going to be able to hold my weight with the remaining good weight I have for the rest of the season, week in and week out. So you're adding another 5 weeks, possible six, if we're that wild card team, before you really get to the crux of possibly playing for the Lombardi. So, yeah, it's a lot. And then as a player, if I'm a current player, what are we getting? Like, what are we getting? And then what they also have to do is have the discipline to, like, not take the cheese, and that's the little extra money that's coming from that NFL deal. You know what I mean? Like, you got to think about, what is it worth to you? And it seems like they have smart guys that are speaking up right now, but all they need is 17 not-so-smart guys or 17 guys that are just not in tune enough.
And that's what we were talking about, because we talked to Jeff Schwartz, and that's what he said. You know, your executive committee on the NFLPA, it's the Richard Shermans, it's the veteran
right.
guys that
and they voted against have, it.
And they voted against right. it. Yeah. But now it's going to a vote
right.
for the players, and that includes a lot of your young guys that, like you're saying, like you were at that time, probably not going to dig in and really look deep and, oh, okay, well, this is more money and more this and more roster spots. Right. We're in.
You I think the owners also know that a lot of the players are week to week with their money, and they don't want a work stoppage, and they can kind of hold that over them too.
That's unfortunate. But
it is unfortunate, but it's
– yeah.
There's some truth to that.
Yeah, you made a good point, and obviously I forgot what it was, but it was to the effect that how the owners treat their money towards the players. Like, the owners are billionaires, you know what I'm saying? So I feel like, and this is not what you're talking about, the owners do a great job of, going back to what you're saying, getting someone at home that's into sports and doesn't do research to think that, oh, it's just one game. But these owners are billionaires, not trying to come off, pennies really in their pockets. So, you know, they're going to win at the end of the day, but it's up to the players to have a strong committee and, you know, get more support from the president of the NFLPA. 'Cause I said it off air, but it's known that I think that he's trash as a PA official. Like, you know, we had, Upshaw before, he was great. He's a former player. And then, you know, you get D. Smith from, you know, Capitol Hill.
Law school, yeah.
He's a politician. So he can't really have any empathy, sympathy, or compassion for what a player really has to go through or, you know, whatever. So
what's important, as we kind of finish up this hour here, from a player standpoint, CBA, is it, now that you're out and where you are, is it, you know, is it more money? Is it a bigger piece of the pie? Is it health insurance? Is it benefits? What's kind of the driving force that will make the players happy? Or is it all?
They're not going to realize it. Like, if they were smart enough to realize, it would be health benefits. It would be health benefits for your family. Like, not everybody is going to be able to retire and open up, you know, businesses and do different things, go back to school, whatever it is. So you need to take care of your family because, okay, you might be making $2 million a year right now. You could be making $20 million a year. We've seen people on both ends of the scale lose it all. Mm-hmm. But you want to make sure you're able to insure your family because, look, I'm having to do all that stuff now, pick insurance plans and stuff like that, and it's not cheap. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So if you're 27 in the league, still balling, and you got three kids, and you might be a, you know, $3 million a year guy when you retire, you might have assets, 12, cash, 7, you know what I mean? You're 29 when you retire. Like, that's kind of scary, especially if you're not smart. Maybe right. That's just everything you accumulated. You know what I mean? And you never had to be smart, and now you have to be smart.
And to your point earlier, you've got all kinds of people pulling on you, and you got to be careful with that.
And you want to live the same lifestyle too.
Yeah. Does Tom Brady leave New England, you think?
I don't think he does. Like, what's the riff? I don't understand. What's the riff? He wants to play 2 more years. What's the top dollar? What? Give me $20 million to play quarterback this year, or give me a $50 million over 2-year deal, or make something up.
I think the riff is give me a line that'll protect me and some weapons so I can go win another Super Bowl.
Definitely weapons. So that's what I'm saying.
Their playmakers were
horrendous.
I keep telling people to name me New England's second wide receiver.
Yeah, I'm doubling. On third down, I'm taking out the running back, and you handle Edelman, and then you got what you want.
You're good. Then go ahead,
you're
Tom.
Good.
Force it somewhere else. Yeah.
So
you're good.
So that might be an option.
But no, they have to get weapons for him. But I think they'll work that out.
Okay,
they should. He's been like you that's start, whack. Like
you start thinking about all the players that you identify with one specific team. You're one of them. You know, I think a lot of people forget that you ended up with the Giants.
But
Jerry Rice, Emmitt Smith, Peyton Manning.
Yeah, for sure. But not at 42 years old, bro. Yeah. Not at 42 years old. You know what I'm saying?
Like,
I went to the Giants 10 years ago. I was 31 years old when I went to the Giants. Like, this guy is 42. He'll be 43 next
football
season.
So you're the same age.
Yeah, we're in the same draft class.
Crazy.
I bet his day was longer than mine.
Sure was.
Big TV 12. Hey Keith, always good to see you, man.
Thanks for having me. It was
for
great
coming in. Appreciate it. All right, get him on Twitter at KB53 Keith Bullock.
And whenever you announce your next venture, come on with us.
Yeah, you already know. I'm coming here first.
Okay, perfect.
Got some great stuff coming up. Hey, when we come back, we'll get you a combine update. Some dudes were throwing up some weight yesterday. We've got some bench press numbers for you. Also, Rhett Bryant stuck a microphone in Daniel Batuli's face. So we got that coming up next. 3HL 104.5 The Zone.
I negotiate for